Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Drive Through HR After Dark. I am one of your co-hosts, Crystal Miller, and I'm joined by William Tincup, who I am hoping people can hear. William, are you there? Well, that's not starting out well. okay. Well, this could be a really fun show. Awesome. So it's a great day. And I'm going to go out on a leap and hope that William's going to call back. And I'm going to hope that you guys can hear me. If you can hear me, do me a favor, put a shout out on the Twitters. I was actually listening because it's 9 o'clock at night. But I guess for some people, they're still working, right? Like, when does the workday actually end? For me, it never really stops, which is part of the problem and joy or whatever of being an entrepreneur. I've been working on my own for like 4 years now. So, well, probably longer than that, but this last endeavor has been around 4 years. William's back. Let's see if he can hear us.
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yay.
Yay. It all worked out. It all worked out. What's going on?
Oh, well, now I'm just, like, calming back down from, dear God, please don't make me have to do an hour and a half show by myself. So, you know, it's good times, fun stuff. Leap year. I'm going to chalk this up to leap year.
It is a leap year. We should hold the show every 4 years. We'll just do leap years. That way we'll just kind of, hey, we'll see you next show. Next show's coming right up. It's 4 years away. All right, I got a couple of things I want to bring to your attention and get your take on. Do you want to start first? You got something for me?
Oh, I've got all kinds of things, but I mean, you seem pretty excited, so you go.
All righty, Zenefits. I want to talk to Zenefits Meltdown here. If everyone's not completely up to date with it, it was just a company that was really a rocket ship in the industry, kind of played outside of the industry, if you will, kind of like a lot of Silicon Valley players, Zen Payroll, which is now Gusto. A lot of folks that kind of they either play within and play, you know, kind of by the rules, go to HR Tech, you know, get a lot of people within the industry kind of talking about them. And then there's companies that play outside of that. And there's no really hard and fast rules. At the end of the day, Zenefits was this, it was really viewed by Silicon Valley as a massive success. Lots of money raised. They were going out and gobbling up a ton of market share. And evidently, it wasn't run that well. The company had some really poor HR policies, to say the least. If you've seen Wolf of Wall Street, more similar to that than not. Let's just kind of leave it at that. But you definitely need to go read about it. Read about their leadership. Their CEO has now lost his job, and now they're on to some people that are kind of cleaning things up. And trying to make Zenefits a really great company, a good place to work, best place to work type stuff. So I want to get your take. Crystal, have you heard much or anything about Zenefits?
I have. I mean, for me, it feels eerily similar to something that I lived through, 8 years ago, ish. So the home building company I ran HR for was also a hyper-growth company. So Zenefits was totally a hyper-growth startup. While the construction company I worked for wasn't exactly a startup, it was still in early years of its being, and it was growing at a rate of like 1,800% in terms of units made. It was like at 600-something% in terms of employee growth. Like, they grew too fast, and I feel like Zenefits did some of the same things. And so like, when you're growing a company, and you know this because you've owned a company, like, growing too slowly, failing to scale is a concern, right? People think about that, and if they don't scale, they die, all that stuff.
Right.
But But, you know, growing too fast can do the same thing because you grow so quickly that you don't put the foundations and safeguards in place to keep some of the stuff that it looks like happened at Zenefits from happening. So, you know, I read all of this and went, that feels familiar.
Right. I think, so I've got, first of all, I got the exact same take. However, the only thing that I think that I hold HR companies, and this might just be me and like, you know, my own character flaws or whatever. If you're selling HR, so whether or not you're selling uniforms or staffing solutions or RPO or talent assessments, whatever. Whatever the bid is, if you're a line item in HR, recruiting HR, I think you should have great HR. Like, I have this belief that, you know what, if you're selling to this group of people, it's like selling to a group of accountants and never doing your accounting, like being audited every year by the IRS. Or selling to salespeople and being terrible at sales. Like, it seems to me that if you're selling to that audience, you should be a great company. You should at least HR. Your HR department should be good or great. I mean, let's just throw out the great word, right? Like, we should hold those companies to higher standards. Go ahead.
I agree with it in concept, but in execution, it's the cobbler's shoes. I mean, it's the same thing with recruiting agencies. They do a great job at recruiting, which is why they've got like a 90% churn rate. You know, so you think they would be fabulous at it because it's what they do for a living. But no, in reality, they suck. So, you know, by and large, they suck at hiring. And it's funny, but that's, you know, it's funny sad. But that's the way the world works, right? So, you know.
Yeah, but why do we accept that? I mean, I get it. I totally under that. I've had that particular pain running a marketing company and not doing great marketing. I get that. It's just, why do we allow it? Like, I understand that it happens, but why we buy? Why? We buy. You and I both advise people that buy. So when they're buying, why don't they ask the questions? Are you a good company? Are you a best places to work? Are you on Fortune's list? Let me look you up in Glassdoor. Like, why don't we ask those questions?
Okay. So, well, first of all, we don't care. Like, if we're just being brutally honest, we don't care. What we care about is what you can do for me. And we don't look to what you do for you as a proof point. We look at what you do for other companies, probably because we assume the company that's selling to us will lie. Are you a great company? Of course. Are you a best place to work? I think so. You know, like, and let's be real, those best place to work things, that's good marketing. I was on the committee that ran that for 4 years for a really large organization. And that was really just as simple as following up with everybody you sent the survey to. And half the time, they weren't going to risk saying anything bad because they didn't get in trouble because they didn't totally believe it was anonymous.
I know. So, it's an award. It's an award. It's a game. And there are people that play that game and people that don't. You're right. I mean, I get that. But if people aren't even willing to play that game, I mean, they're either stupid, which is one, drunk, somehow on barbiturates, high, or they just don't care. Like, they're apathetic or lazy. Like, you're right. All those awards are just that. They're awards. And one can go through the process of applying for and then gaming the system. You can hire consultants. You can do all kinds of stuff like that. I get that. But if someone hasn't even done that... Like, aren't they sending you a message about how they treat their own people?
Maybe, but for them to even really be cognizant of that, we have to first say, no, this is a standard baseline of expectation. Because seriously, if we demanded it as buyers, they'd do it.
Right.
If we don't demand it, so they don't do it.
Yeah, and there's some that do. I do want to call out a couple of companies that do actually the ultimate software is probably one of the better ones. I mean, they actually do care. They actually do have great Ceridian. It's got great HR, got a great HR leader. They poll well both on, you know, all of their different satisfaction surveys and whatnot, but even on Glassdoor, like, you can go look. And yeah, that's yet another game, and I do understand that. But they care enough about the game to play it.
Yeah, so I'll give Glassdoor a shout out because I'm hard on Glassdoor sometimes. But from a like employee input perspective, so like the feedback that they give, I feel is pretty genuine. I mean, you get disgruntled employees there and whatever, but I don't feel like that's overly gamed by HR because it's anonymous feedback, right? So no one will really prove it. Who did what, where, when, or how? HR can ask. And I've actually worked with companies that were running glass door feedback campaigns, which is becoming more common. Yay, great, you know, hands claps. But the interesting thing about it is, like, they don't really know if you do it or not. They just see their score go up, which is really all they really care about.
Yeah, I like the balancing of stories. To me, if the recruiting talent acquisition, if it's an employer branding deal and talent acquisition has their hands in it, it's, yeah, there's a narrative. And, yeah, there it could be disgruntled. It could be current. It could be whatever the bit is. But there's another part of the story. There always is another part of the story. Someone comes to interview with you, and they think really highly of themselves. You think they're a can of shit. They don't get the job. You don't give them feedback. They go on to Glassdoor, and they trash you. Well, that's not fair on some level, and there's got to be a kind of a balancing out. There's got to be some other parts of that narrative. I like that. I mean, that's why I'll look at Yelp reviews and look for balance rather than if it's all glowing, I don't trust it. Ironic, but truth. If all of the reviews are positive, I don't trust anything that's all positive. I want to see someone in there that's had a bad experience.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I mean, and it's, I think the more they read with it, you can suss out for yourself what's really legitimate and what's somebody agree that they didn't get a job or, you know, whatever, offer job, whatever the case may be. But all of that being said, I think it'll be interesting to see. I don't think the Zenefits scandal is over. Like, I think we're hearing maybe what could be the beginning to the middle of it, right? So
yeah,
as this investigation goes, I expect we're going to hear a whole lot more. So what I'm wondering about is, will this be the beginning of the end for Zenefits? And if so, who steps up to take the place?
Yeah, I mean, they stole market share. Who was hurt the most? I mean, what's ironic about all the payroll plays is everyone grew market share and has and does. Right now, if you look at everybody, all the players, Paycom, Paycor, ADP, Ceridian, Zenefits, Gusto, keep going around to Bamboo, keep going around the horn, all of them are growing. And they all will tell you a story of that they're stealing market share from ADP. Yet if you look at ADP, they're growing. So the market is growing that much. And it was just show you how many people were doing payroll internally or doing benefits internally, et cetera. So there'll be plenty of people that draft behind. If Zenefits actually does go down, there'll be plenty of people that draft behind and pick up the business. But I think you're right. I think this is the tip of the iceberg. I don't think it sinks them. But I mean, out of all the money that they've raised, they need to raise some more money just to get past this political or PR nightmare. And with that, why don't you pivot us and take us into something else?
Okay then. That's fair. All right. PR nightmare. I don't really know that. I think we're about to have a super short show. Evidently, I can think where I'm going to pivot us because I don't know how to pivot.
All righty, I got another one. No worries. See, I write my I write my ideas down. That's what I do. I write them down so that I don't have that.
Did you hear we have 90 seconds left in the show?
No worries. So, we had a show for 15 minutes. It's a 15-minute show.
I feel like we should just keep going. Doesn't it keep recording? I think it does.
Let's keep going. All right. So where are you taking us?
All right. So a couple of things came to mind today. And I got there in a really weird way. So I'll be the first to admit it. But, it's Leap Year. And there's this thing on Leap Year where I guess women can propose to men or whatever. And no, I did not get engaged for 20 days. So let's just knock that out of the park. You know? But that being said, like, it was interesting. There was some like reverse entitlement going on in my Facebook timeline where like women were getting ticked that they weren't getting engaged, but it was their day to ask men to marry them. So anyway, somehow that all got me to the topic of entitlement. So weird way to get there, but that's where I ended up going. And like this, we're entitled to things, which of course start thinking about the workplace and new hires and what are you actually entitled to as a new hire? Really weird road, but that's where I got to. Which, you know, maybe that's because I've heard a couple of people that were onboarding. Corbin just recently started with American Airlines. Tiger Volgrath started with eHarmony for elevated careers. Like there's some neat things happening in the space. Will Staney, you know, has his thing that he's doing with GoDaddy. So he's been publishing a lot about that. So it's just interesting stuff. But like, what makes a good onboarding experience? What are you entitled to when you start a job? And if you don't see it, when should you worry?
Yeah, I kind of, here's onboarding for me. No surprises. Like I want a person to come in and it just naturally takes a while for you to learn them and them to learn you. And there's no shortcut for that. There's chemistry, there's lunches, there's beer after work, there's the occasional email thread. There's all of that stuff that just kind of has to happen. But outside of that, so that experiential stuff that I don't believe there is actually a shortcut for, the other side of that is anything else that isn't experiential shouldn't be a surprise. So if you know that they're going to have a performance review in 90 days, they should know that. They should know that day one. If you know that their boss is, pretty prickly about feedback or takes Fridays off or whatever the bit is, whatever it is, giving them guidance around just no surprises. Like, hey, we all do this bit at Top Golf on Thursday nights. We all kind of go out. It's a bonding deal. We all show up a little bit late on Friday. So if you don't want to do the thing on Thursday, that's cool. You got to go do stuff with your kids. That's cool. Just don't show up at 8 o'clock on Friday because you'll make us feel bad. You know that this is what's going on. Like that stuff we should just talk about. And so the first day, first week, first month, first 3 months, whatever your process is, like Curtis Midkiff, who you know we both know and love, when he first started at Southwest. Yeah, the onboarding with Southwest Airlines was you had no responsibilities for the first month. None. They told you, purpose, go have meetings, go to other people's meetings, just show up, go to lunch, meet people, take flights, go to other places, meet people, and fall in love with Southwest Airlines. And then, you know, we'll get to the work stuff. You know, at the end of the month, we'll start talking about what you like, what you found out, what you learned, what you didn't, etc. Now they can do that, and it's companies big enough, and they've got that type of brand, and they're beloved, and all that other stuff that they can do something as kind of radical as no work. I think if it was Albertsons, they probably couldn't do like that because you know it turns out you've got to go clock in and do work. But I do like the idea of like, no, you don't have to do anything. In fact, if you do something, that's actually probably a problem. It's probably an indicator to us that you're not a fit.
Mm-hmm.
If you do work, we want you to go meet people, talk and have fun and fall in love. The idea is that you reaffirm, made a good decision. And Southwest Airlines is the best company for me at this particular juncture. And I love them. And I like that. I mean, that's just something sentimental about it, that they if we think of recruiting as a romance, and we use that metaphor a lot, well, I know we do, but I'm not sure that we actually follow through with it as once people get, when we first, like there's a whole lot of romance. We wine them and dine them and do the whole bit. And that, I mean, we go to great depths to wine and dine them. And the moment that they're hired, we typically turn off and we're not romantic and we don't do anything else after that. It's just like, okay, good luck. Hopefully it works. And we drop them at the deep end and that becomes either they swim or they become like us or they don't. And I don't think that was ever a good idea. I think companies behave like that. Go ahead.
No, I think you're right. Go ahead.
So I think companies behave like that, but I don't think it was ever a good idea. Now in this era of transparency, I don't think that you can behave like that. And I never thought you should, but now I don't think that you can behave like that. Dropping people into the at the deep end of the pool, very Wall Street boiler room type of behavior. I think that folks that are in their 20s and 30s, they just they'll just bail. First of all, they'll hear about it before and never apply. So there's that. But let's say they get conned into taking the job, they'll just get up and leave. Like, yeah, done. I'll go get another gig. So I think that the more you do an onboarding to solidify, you made the right decision. We made the right decision. We're in this together. We're not going to sandbag you. We're not going to pull out a bunch of, oh, wow, forgot to tell you, you're going to have to travel 90%. There's no surprises. We've talked through it. We're going to continue to talk through it. And if something comes along, we'll make sure that you understand it and know about it. We'll make sure that we honor you through this process that we're doing something together. We've chosen you, you've chosen us.
Okay, I'm about to sound really jaded. But I think to honor employees, you have to care about them. And I have to question how many companies, Sarah, the HR director, cares about her employees. Great. Bob, the manager, cares about his employees. Great. So, I think on an individual level, you can see caring. But from an organizational level, so you, pull it back to the company itself, does the company really care about their employees, or do they see them more as, replaceable parts? Because I think...
Well, the pessimist in me... Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry,
no, finish your thought.
Well, I was just saying, if you see them as replaceable parts, a lot harder to do what you're describing. And I think the problem is, I remember, again, I draw back to my days in this one company running HR because there's just so many awesome stories from it. But, I remember the CEO saying, employees are like cars. And you drive them until they start to give you problems, and then you drive them in. And I remember thinking, dude, you're a total dick. But he wasn't. He was really not all that. I mean, that was an awful thing to say, but he really wasn't that different than a lot of other leadership that I've talked to over the years. Maybe they wouldn't have said it quite like that, but the reality is, there's a drama quotient, right? So if you have a problem with an employee, you just replace them. And if you get into that mindset, it's really easy to be in that mindset from go. Well, I'm going to hire you, but if it doesn't work out, I'm going to replace you. If that's what you think, it makes it harder to care, doesn't it?
Yeah, again, I how things are and how things should be. It's the balance of optimism and pessimism, right? So how things are, I think decidedly more 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and aughts are more and more and more pessimistic. So it plays off of both of our fears and backgrounds and experiences of how things are really kind of dark. Employees are movable pieces. They're resources, just like all the other types of resources. They're replenishable. I think at one point things change and have changed in our society that you can't get away. You shouldn't have ever done it. Check. You can't get away with it anymore. And I'm probably wrong. But I'm pushing my beliefs over into, I just don't think, because it was never right. That was never, if it's a moral issue, it's never right. It's always been wrong for the CEO to say, and employees are our most important assets, and then never do anything with it. That was just fundamentally flawed and fundamentally wrong. However, I think in today's culture, I think it goes further. That those people that still believe that way become more and more like dinosaurs. And it's not the feel-good, happy, let's all, have flowers and kind of run off into the sunset shit. I'm just thinking it's just pragmatically. It's going to hurt your brand. It's going to actually hurt your company. It's going to hurt sales if you allowed the buffoonery to continue. So I'm not looking at it as an optimist saying, these are how things, I want them to be like this. I think at one point companies start getting burned because of the things that they've let happen in their firm. And so there's this whole wave of younger people that just won't tolerate it. And, oh, by the way, now they have Twitter. And you can say whatever you want to about the millennial that posted about Yelp and whatever. And yeah, okay, like there's a whole lot of commonsensical advice that we'd all like to give her. However, what's lost on that is Yelp's dinged.
Yeah.
Yelp's forever dinged. It's like, why would I want to work at that fucking shithole? So, yeah, should she have done it? Right? Should she have done it? Nah, okay, maybe there's a better way. Should she have taken a job knowing, okay. Again, there's a mountain of advice I'd love to give to this young woman. However, I'll never think about Yelp the same way. Not their leadership.
Yeah, you know, I agree. I feel kind of the same way about Walmart, right? Like, you know, but I still shop there. So.
Fair enough. Well,
use Yelp and eat 24, right? Like, it's not going to change. And again, that goes back to what you were talking about at the beginning. Like, why do we put up with it? Or, you know, why don't companies do these things? Well, because we don't really care. Like, we do and we don't. When we stop using the services, when we stop going to their store and giving them money, when we stop funding them, they'll change. Until then.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting is our whole conversation really has a political twist on it because it's the same thing. Donald Trump would not exist if we didn't pay attention to the news. Like I've told someone today, I've really never been that political. I've never really paid attention to the nomination process of a president. I've just always been busy and doing other shit and more apathetic, whatever. And I find myself every night, I watch the news. I watch this stuff, which is all free advertising for him. And again, if we wanted Donald Trump to go away, we'd all not participate in that. And turns out he would go away. But we're our own biggest enemy here. So you're probably, I mean, you're right. I know you're right. But I'm trying to balance out on the work side of things. I want things to be different. And so I'm hopeful that things will become different, not necessarily how they are right now, because that just triggers a bunch of dark shit for me. So I purposely don't do that. Let's go on to another topic. Okay, so someone followed me on Twitter today, and I turned around and I followed them back, and it was a Twitter handle called HR is Dead. And I thought, you know, that sounds like a Twitter handle that I have to look at. That's just something right up my alley. HR is dead. And so I wanted to investigate, like, well, okay, you know, I follow everybody from, you know, male prostitutes to people in our industry and back and forth. So I follow everybody. That's more of a kind of a how I go about things. But this one actually caught my attention. And I went to the website, and it was this whole 5-7-page manifesto about how HR, human resources, is dead. That it should be dead. If it's not dead, we should have other titles that play to the people side of things. So a chief people officer, VP of people, VP of people and culture, etc. So they had a bunch of examples, and their whole bit was, you know, we should stop thinking of these people as human resources. Back to what you said just a moment ago, that these movable pieces and replaceable parts and things like that, we should stop thinking that way. And we should put the people back into this, put the human back in human resources, if you will. So I was just, you know, I was kind of enamored with it for a couple minutes. And then I was like, I couldn't find out who was driving this. So then that just made me curious. Like, okay, you know, who is it? It is Tim Sakic again. Like, who's doing this bit? And there's nothing on the website that says who they are. So I went to networksolutionsnetsol.com, went to Whois, put in the domain name, and lo and behold, it is a software company in the space called PaySavvy, which is changed. It's rebranded to Rise, R-I-S-E dot X-Y-Z, which I didn't even know was a domain, but evidently it is. You can go and get a three-letter domain that ends with XYZ. So Rise.XYZ is a software company in our space, and they built this movement, if you will, off to the side called HR is Dead. So with all that background, I want to get your take. First of all, on one level, do you think it's just shtick and just, you know, like, do you, you know, is it just pandering? And that one level, I just want to give your emotional take to it. Secondly, the idea that vendors put out these kind of movements, whether or not they're silly or funny or satirical, like HireVue did the one at HR Tech, the one around the Cards Against Humanity or whatever, Cards Against HR. Do you like these ideas? Are these things that vendors should be doing, these movement-ish types of things? So on one level, give me your gut, and then the second level, tell me what you think about vendors playing in that area.
So Cards Against HR, I loved, right? Because, I mean, all it's really doing is making fun of the inane stuff that HR people have to deal with, which is like Cards Against Humanity. Like, it's the worst part of you. We all have it. You all think it's funny. Let's accept it and move on, right? It's a game. This kind of thing, I hate. Like, I literally loathe this kind of stuff. One, it's bad marketing. If you know who your buyer is, they're not going to want to hear that they're dead and that their function is irrelevant. So you've got to be talking to people who don't have HR in order for this to fly. And two, I think, I mean, you may disagree with me, but two, you know, if it's saying, oh, no, but we don't mean like your function's irrelevant. We mean like you've evolved and you didn't know it yet. Well, that's a little condescending. Who are you to come into my organization and tell me that I need to change my org so you can sell me software? Like, I don't like it.
So my quick take, I don't like it either because of some of what you meant, but it's paternal. It's the you know, if you watch Cowboy and Indians movies as growing up, this is the guy on the white horse. This is the guy with the white hat. He's going to come in and rescue things. This is a well-worn path, and these vendors are kind of coming into the industry, not necessarily participating in the industry. They're probably not even sure members. They probably don't even go to our events. They probably don't partake in the industry. They're just kind of saying HR is dead. Well, again, to your point, you're either selling to a CEO or a business owner, small business probably, and you're just saying HR is dead. You really need to focus on the people side of things, which, again, to your point, who gives you the fucking right to say that? But at the end of the day, why not just spend money on getting to know people? Like, why not just spend money on good old-fashioned networking or sending out salespeople to meet people where they are? And it's a false movement. Like, whenever you have to tell somebody it's a movement, that's usually the moment. I tell people the modus operandi of consumer marketing is very simple. The moment you understand your buyer is the very moment that they change. That's consumer marketing. And that's a truism that happens everywhere in consumer marketing. The moment you have to tell somebody that something a movement is the very movement that it is, there's the very moment that it isn't a movement.
Right.
You shouldn't have to tell somebody. And not only you shouldn't have to, you should probably question, is this really our place? Is this really what God did? Am I on this earth to really do this? Is this why I'm here? And the answer is always no. So yeah, but I, you know, of course, I follow the Twitter handle, so we'll see if there's any value that comes from that. But I thought I'd bring that up to you. So,
no,
what do you think?
Well, I'm about to tell you, but I'm not done with this one yet.
Okay, sounds good.
So I would say, like, it's easy to knock it and say I hate it, right? And I do. Like, I really, really loathe this. But I think it could have been done better, right? Like, if you want to do this kind of thing, if you want to say there's a better way, why not take a positive spin? Hey, we're doing so great. We're actually elevating up to the next level of HR, right? HR's not dead. HR's evolving. HR's next level. Get on board. Hey, people want to be part of positive things. So
the only difficulty is that was the problem with the Enlightenment. The period of the Enlightenment is that some people understood evolution and understood, had the secret knowledge, and there was a group of people that didn't. And the thing is we're still flawed there. We're still, you know, why am I doing this? Why are we doing this, et cetera? Now, if you were to say, hey, listen, we're going to get 100 practitioners, like, and we're going to get them together, and we're going to say, how do we And what if we just look at HR and we focus more on the people side of things? And we think about that from a, like, profession. Like, should it be SHRM? Should we have a SHRM that's focused on the human resources side of things and not necessarily the people side? And if it comes from practitioners, like if a vendor harnesses real practitioner sentiment and they had a hand in pulling that sentiment together and pulling those people together, and then they render that in a way of saying, here's a mirror. Your peers have said this. This is what we've learned. What do you think? That's different. That's altogether different. And the world's we can have a lot of those. But look at all the steps there. It's not making it about you. Check. You're not coming in on a white horse. Check. Practitioners are the ones that are determining this. Check. Like, you know, it's everything that vendors do. Like, when I talk to vendors about doing story development for practitioners, the hardest conversation I have to have with marketers is it isn't about you. In fact, I'm going to go as far as saying if one of your customers is talking about their story, their innovation, their, you know, their hero story, whatever the bit is, and if they don't mention your name, that's success. So you've got to go all the way to the very end of that is I don't want them to have to say your name because that's the very moment it has to go to legal and PR. But if they're talking about their hero story, their innovation story, what they do really well, that's stories that everybody lines up for. We all line up. I mean, you and I line up for those stories. We all line up for those stories. But whenever it feels dirty, like it feels like they're shilling, it feels like they might even be paid or maybe they got a discount on the software, it gets dirty. And if it feels dirty, it's like there's a saying, a hint of impropriety is impropriety. And so when we feel dirty about those things, that's where that's coming from. But anyhow.
Yeah, no, totally agree with that. I just think if you're going to go that route, you should go the positive route as opposed to the negative route.
And yeah.
Okay. I don't know. Interesting. But, okay, speaking of negative stuff, now, totally contradict my own advice. So there's been a little uptick in the grumbling around the spam count in HR technology. Like, just how aggressive certain HR vendors are getting with sending emails, follow-up emails, and some of the stuff they say. And, like, I listen to this much more now than I did, like, a year ago. A year ago, like, I tuned in and out, whatever. But even I've noticed in the last few months, like, I'm getting emails that are actually kind of rude. You know, one vendor messaged me, I don't know, like, 2-3 weeks ago. I didn't need it. I don't hire people. I mean, well, like, if I do, I'm not hiring at a scale that requires software. So I just ignored it,
you know,
like put a little check mark on the, okay, this company's here. Check that stuff out. If any of my clients need it, I don't need it right now. I'm not going to act on it right now. Delete. So like about a week ago, I get another email and Danielle is telling me that this is her third email to me and she would appreciate the courtesy of a reply. And my response looking at that was kind of like, get bent. Like, I don't owe you anything just because you emailed me. That's like saying if you're a telemarketer and you call me during dinner, I have to stop eating dinner to answer the phone because you called.
Mm-hmm.
What is up with the email marketing lately in HR tech?
Well, first of all, that's all automation. So those things, those retargeter types of emails, you can set a boomerang. And you can do these very sophisticatedly using sophisticated email marketing, you know, the Eloquas and Marketos and Pardots of the world. If somebody doesn't respond in the way that you want, they've got a canned response. So your canned response or their canned response to your non-movement is already kind of set up. And it's you know, there's a lot of things that bring us here. So first of all, everyone's a content marketer. Okay, so now, as opposed to 10 years ago, or, you know, hell, 5 years ago, everyone that markets to HR and recruiting is now not just a content marketer, a content publisher, and they're actually pretty decent at it. And when I say decent, I mean they're decent at creating noise. And so the noise of white papers, the noise of infographics, the noise of case studies, the noise of webinars, all these are just, it's the belief in content marketing that says, if we drown you with substance, then you'll take a demo of our software. Now, we just got to drown you in substance. And most of them don't even give you substance. They just, they drown you with stuff. Now, so one of the reasons that you're getting all those things is that they've upped their game because the response rates are getting worse and worse. They're getting lower and lower. 2004, you could send out a campaign in the industry and you could get a 15 to 20% response rate. You know, if you get a 1% response rate today, you're a hero as a content marketer. Hero. And most campaigns don't get 1%. And that's them taking the action. And the reason is your audience is just getting more content. They have to filter through all of that crap and still do their job. So it's not working. And on some levels, it was always kind of there was a logical fail between one and the other. And we're just dealing with it because you and I deal with software folks a lot. If you want them to look at software, do they really have to read your white paper? Do they really have to go to your webinar? Do they have to care about what Lou Adler says about the hiring or non-hiring? Do they have to care about that stuff? And the answer is no. If you want them to do if you just want them to look at software, you got to make it easy for them to look at software. But marketers don't want to hear that story because that's not what they've been trained. That's not what HubSpot and Marketo has trained us to do. What they've trained us to do is put more shit in the system and get more names and put it more. And to your point, make it more aggressive. And that's that no one's going to be forced to buy software. And that's the people, I mean, this is like common sense, right? You don't just wake up and go, oh, my God, I have to buy software. No, you fall in love with the salesperson. You fall in love with the idea. You have a pain or a relative pain to that, and you think that it gives you a chance of solving that pain. And you like the people, you like the company, you like the shtick. Nowhere in there is you've been beaten to death with their email marketing, and somehow you've flipped and you've bought. And so it's tactically, it's dumb. Strategically, it's just as dumb. Like the people that are giving those folks advice, or if they're doing it, baking it internally, it's they don't have another arrow in their quiver. So it highlights that what we've become in marketing. You know, the pendulum used to be, it's always a balance between art and science, right? So on the end of art is science, and on the end of science is art, ironically. So if you talk to a physicist, and you're ever really kind of bored, and you want to, at the end of physics is art. It's belief. It's hope. It's trust. It's things that can't be proven. And the irony is, if you talk to somebody that's an artist, at the end of art, at the very end of art, is science. It's things that are, you know, I mean, what is color theory? What is pointillism? If not, you know, understanding how colors work together, which is all, you know, turns out, chemistry. And so marketers today are comfortable in Excel. They're comfortable with ROI. They're comfortable having discussions about science and the science of marketing. And those folks are terrible at the idea or the art of marketing. So when the reason that you're getting the aggressive stuff is tactically someone told them to do it, strategically they didn't have any better ideas. So it shows and highlights, if you're, you know, you want to think about it from a capitalist perspective, what you do in the marketplace, what Marin does, what I do, what, you know, what Mary Ellen, what a lot of these characters do, is we go in and we help people market better. And there's a real need for that. And so every time you get one of those stupid, automated, angry, faux angry emails, what you really need to do is go, huh, that's validating. Thank you.
Yeah, that's probably not a bad idea. But what I actually do, I'll take that under consideration. Check.
Right.
What you should do is kind of look at, okay, who's sending this out, and you can kind of figure out some of the platforms that it's being sent out on, which is nice. And then I go to that platform's website and I look at their little logo fest that they have at the bottom of their pages, because they almost all do. And I block all of the companies that they have listed. Firma, Greenhouse, you know, Trinet, all that crap that just gets blocked. Like, it's so that I don't.
Oh,
have
nice.
To
it.
So
I like that's a good tactic. I like that.
It's the only way to take my inbox back. So, like, on the downside, you know, maybe I'm missing one of the people from these companies going, hey, help me with my direct stuff. It's possible. And if I ever run into them at a conference, I will say, you use this automated software that I know is awful at cluttering up my inbox. So
yeah. It's not value add. I think that at the end of the day, where the rubber meets the road, just kidding.
Drink someone there,
it's,
William.
It's well, I'm using all the buzzwords. I'm trying to use all of them in one sentence, and it just ran out on me. It's not value add. You know, at one point we die. Like, mm-hmm. This is really morbid, but just bear with me. At one point it's over. Whatever that is, it could be tomorrow, it could be 50 years from now. What doesn't matter. But at one point it's over. Is that really what you want to stand for? I mean, really? I mean, as a marketer, think more than just your lead goal. And this is, again, how we compensate people creates the behavior.
Yep.
And so we've grown up in this era where the lead goal is now the goal. And so all these marketers that you and I love, they're bonused based on them hitting their lead goal. And their lead goal always increases. And if it looks like they're tracking to their lead goal, their bosses increase the lead goal. And so that manufactures this behavior, this very behavior that we think is absurd. And it is absurd. But if they get one more lead out of it that helps them get to the lead goal, just back to what you said a second ago about HR, they'll do it. They'll piss off 100 people that could be potentials to get to the one lead that gets them closer to their lead goal and thusly their bonus.
So
how dark is that?
No, you're right. And because I'm on lead tonight, I'll just say that's a dick move all the way around. It's a bad move on behalf of the marketer, and it's a bad move on behalf of the manager. Like, so at that point, you know, people get what they ask for. So I'm going to give you an example of a company that's trying to do it better.
Okay,
because I think it's kind of interesting too. So in all of this, like, swirl of conversation that I've seen lately in a lot of the Facebook groups and even just my own frustration with my inbox, you know, something came up after a conference about this one company that it wasn't like the only one, but it was this particular example of talking about this one company who had just like spammed the snot out of the conference goers. You know, hey, and it wasn't even like totally relevant, but it was a new incident. She was trying, whatever. Here's what I really liked about this. So I shot the guy a note because I know the CEO of that company and said, hey, I know you wouldn't want to be thought of in this way.
This isn't you. This is not you. Yeah.
Right, because it was a good group of people and they had been at the conference, just the person emailing everybody had not, so she didn't know who would be targeting and who not to. Really, you're getting nailed, I mean, hard in these forums for spamming. You know, here's what's being sent out. Here's what the response is. Maybe you guys want to change that. So the CEO's response to that was, we're not sending emails for 2 months. We're going to figure out what we need to do, how we need to do it, go talk to some practitioners, figure out the cadence, and we're going to do it better.
Genius.
That's
what it could be. Yeah, so, man, first of all, who was that? That's very cool.
That was Zoomforce. That's Christopher Murphy.
Yeah, that's genius. Good for him, and good for you for bringing it to his, because that isn't Chris. That isn't his bit. And the fact that you, I mean, first of all, that's good for you, that you actually took out a fucking moment of your day when you're as busy as hell, and to actually call him and reach out to him and say, hey, some things that are happening. First of all, thanks, because that makes us all better when we're accountable, when we feel like we're accountable to others, and then taking time to actually make his life better. You know, that he'll remember that and he'll appreciate it. I like the 2 months. It's arbitrary, of course, which I of course love. But I'm just getting your shit together. Like, pause. Okay, we're just going to hit pause and trying to figure it out. And obviously we were off. And thanks for bringing it to our attention, because the worst thing could have happened is no one mentioned it and everyone tear them apart behind the scenes. So, you know, I think it's totally good for him. I can't wait to see what they come up with. Like, now,
yeah,
I'm on the other end of that. Like, I don't even care what they come up with. I like the idea that they're going to give it some time to think.
Yeah, I think it'll be really interesting. And, you know, it's one of those things where I don't expect, so while I'm saying I block companies, like, just proactively because I don't want to get their automated crap, I don't expect companies to be perfect. I do expect when they get a feedback like that, or just any kind of
mm-hmm.
feedback, and you get it in one way or the other, right? Whether it's in your stats, like in the open rates you don't get, or in someone reaching out to you, all of that's information that you can act on. Like, when I send out an email campaign, if I'm not getting a decent response rate, I got a message back from the people I sent that to. It's called, I'm not interested.
That's a good point. That's a good point. That's a good point.
Take that and do something about it. You know, and if I don't see that a company is doing that, I have no interest in doing business with that company. That tells me something too. Like, you don't respect me as a buyer? Cool. There's other companies that will. I don't know of a single company that doesn't have a competitor.
I got last topic. Let me throw you one, because I've been thinking about it lately and I don't have any hard and fast feelings about it. Obviously, employer branding is like a crystal, not you, but like a crystal. And it's got a lot of different sides to it. Light flows through it. And, you know, people see in that crystal what they want. And in particular, I'm trying to figure out, yeah, right? So what I'm trying to figure out is millennials. Are they different? Okay, your experience, because you help a lot of people with employer brand. You know a lot about this space. Are they sensitive in any other way? Are they different in any other way? Do they have needs or expectations that are different than Gen Y, Gen X, Boomers, et cetera, those that have, you know, come before them, if you will? So really, employer branding, millennials, similar, different, dot, dot, dot.
I feel like you'll see less of a difference between Gen X, Gen Y, and millennials. And there are differences. They're subtle. Then you will, like, baby boomers to millennials, right? Big difference there. You know, it's funny. I was talking to my dad about this the other day because for anyone who doesn't know, he does some work with my firm. Really, really brilliant analyst guy. Very, very smart. He's literally an aeronautical engineer. So when people talk about, you know, that's not rocket science, my dad that. So, like, he could handle the data that we put out in HR any day of the week. So he's helping me with some of the audits and stuff on that I'm doing with employer branding. It's, you know, talking through this stuff. He's like, you know, we put so much more emphasis now on attracting people, where, you know, 30, 40 years ago, it was like, we have this job, why should you get it? Now it's, we have this job, and here's all of the reasons you want it. But when you think about how kids were parented, I mean, like, going back to the 80s to now, there's much more of a focus around what do you want, how can it make you feel good, participation trophies, everybody should be a winner. Like, you don't spend 13 formative years with young people and think that's just going to drop and change on a dime when they go to work. So, yeah, I mean, it's different. It's definitely different. But it's really kind of an interesting disparate experience, right? It can be anyway, because we spend all of this time attracting people, and especially in mid to large companies, who are they going to work for? Like, who's their boss or their boss's boss? Their baby boomers.
Right.
I do not understand what the hell's going on with these kids.
No, not at all. Is anybody doing millennial employer branding really, really well?
Oh, I mean, yeah, lots of companies are doing it well. I like Google, but I mean, who doesn't like Google, right? But yeah, I think
Yahoo
did a good job about that. Oh, yeah, okay, that's fair. That's fair. You know, Johnson & Johnson has some pretty slick branding on a very large scale, right, when you're looking at enterprise. But I think the smaller the company, the easier it is for them to get a grasp on really targeted messaging and employer branding, because if you've got 100 employees and half of them are millennials, you're going to just, I hate to use this word, authentically speak millennial mm-hmm. lives, but like you're kind of closer tied into yeah. it because it's already
a
part
dolphin.
Of your
culture. A dolphin died right there.
Yeah, but when you get to like the 50,000 to 250,000 employee mark, like realistically, who's running your company is not a millennial or probably not even Gen Xers. So, you know, and who's running each of those departments are probably in the same thing, right? So right. It's a little more of a concerted effort to get to the point where that messaging passes muster. This is opinion, right? Like I don't have hard.
Yeah, yeah, no, I got it. No, I got it. I'm trying to, as along the path, it's like visual, what type of imagery, you know, sets well, what type of color scheme, what type of tone, like, is there anything different in the language that we use? Is it sarcasm works better? Like, I have no data around this at either. It's just, it's kind of interesting to think, okay, first of all, is it different? All right. If we can say it's different. And if so, what are some of the subtle differences? And I have no hard and fast feelings on it. I'm just, it's something that's, I wouldn't say keeping me up at night. It's just something I'm kind of chewing on.
Universum has some really good data around this. They've got an access site for millennials. If you go to universumglobal.com/millennials, you can get into the access and basically based off of what you do, I'm sure they'll just send it to you. But, it really does give you a lot of the concepts around what you'd be doing in employer branding. And I would say if it's something that you're noodling or it's something that you do and you need some help with that, go check out their research. It's solid. It really is.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
That being said, millennials, way more into visuals. Like they really do care about it. And they want them to be lifestyle type visuals. They want them to be interesting. So that's cool. Now, do they like snark or do they not like snark? You know, to some extent it matters, but to a larger extent, that conversation has to be consistent with your existing brand. Like,
right.
You know.
Yeah. If you're just pandering to them using snark and all the other content is not that, you're going to look like a douche.
Yeah. Well, and if it's not consistent, especially if you're CPG, right? So, or B2C type. Stores. Like if Pottery Barn starts talking about, yo, you hip worker, you, I'm totally confused, right? Like that's not their brand. But
right.
So you kind of keep within context of the established brand guidelines. But, you know, that being said, you can have casual conversations and talk in a casual conversational tone. And that's something that millennials can hold on to, right? Because they don't want to be talked to like you're their teacher. They want you to teach them and shape their careers with them, but they don't partner with them on shaping their careers. But they don't want to be lectured, and they don't want to feel like you're talking down to them. So that's an easy thing you can do that even some of the more conservative brands can kind of adapt to reach millennials.
Very cool. Well, I'm good. This has been fantastic.
Thanks. There's all of my all of my opinions, and I really liked yours tonight. This was a fun conversation.
Well, there you go. Hey, we should do this more often.
yes, we should. So this is like, what, our third or fourth?
Is it
fourth?
Is. Yeah. I didn't make one of them, so yeah.
That's okay.
This is good.
Michael didn't make one, so.
Are we still live? Are we still recording?
I don't think we're recording, but I think anybody who's like listened, dialed in can hear us.
Yes. Nobody's doing that. First of all, I think the topics, we stayed HR-y, which was great because I think the more it's John Oliver, but with an HR twist, which by the way, if you haven't seen his Trump tantrum, it is worth watching. It is so good. I think the more we keep it HR-y, the better. Because it really is like, what is your opinion? Like I showed up and with five ideas, three of which I didn't have strong opinions. You know, I didn't have like, I know exactly what I'll say if Twistle says, hey, what do you think? the passing it back and forth, it's still, we've got to figure out how we do that in a real graceful way so that we don't do talk over. But man, I liked it. I think this was the best one that I've participated in. This one was the most fluid.
Yeah, I think so. So a couple of things that I've noticed, like going from four to two. Two feels easier than four. Four's not bad, and it's really lively. That sounded like very kind of down on it. Four was good,
No,
and it was a lively
right.
conversation. It needed a moderator. Like, I mean, at that point,
Yeah.
I think, you know, one
Yeah.
of us drops out of giving opinions and really more focuses on
Flow
moving the
keeps the
conversation.
flow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
So,
Yeah,
and that was the
they become the director at that point. You're like, okay, you haven't spoken, and with four, how many different opinions can you have? You know what I mean? You know, where you like it is when you have a different opinion. It's like, no, I see it differently. I see it. You know, with four people, how the fuck can you do that?
Right. I mean,
You know,
inevitably,
there's always.
like,
Yeah, I agree
there's.
with you. It's like, okay, well, that's thanks.
Yep. I agree. I mean, but yeah, so that was actually Dwayne's idea, and I think it was a good one, right? Like,
That's solid.
if it's going to be you, me, and Michael, or, you know, anything that doesn't matter which, then either the fourth person in our group needs to do that, or we need to call on a Dwayne or a Robin to come play
Yeah.
moderator.
Well, and you could also do it with three. You know, if there's only three on there, you know, before in pre-show, you could say, okay, we have this bevy of ideas. Who wants to be the moderator?
Yep.
And that way it just keeps it simple because you force it to two. When there's four, you could probably still get away with it as three. But even if it's three people show up to the show, you know, I would suggest, hey, one person, don't answer questions. You know, keep, because that also gets you your handoff. Because if that person, let's say it's Mike would then direct traffic. Crystal, you know, what's your take on this? Here's the question. What's your take? You get done, you wrap up. Okay, William, what's your take? Okay, well that's good. Now let's go over here. Like that director or moderator, I think it might even be useful at three. And that's a cool role too. I mean, it's the same thing. It's just, you know, you have less of your opinions, but you know, moderators weave in their opinions. So get them in there.
I was told I'm an awful moderator because I have been too many opinions and not enough questions.
Right.
But I can work on that. That's going to be good practice. So do we want to do it where the moderator is simply directing traffic, or do you want to do it in a way where the moderator gets to choose the topics? Because that could be interesting. I
Well,
could.
I think a little bit. Like they should be able. Like I would if we flip a coin. It's like, oh yeah, Michael's a moderator. I'd send them the questions I have or the idea topics that I have, but I'd let him set the order. You know, and then that way he can actually direct traffic. Like, okay, well, you know, with his own ideas, your ideas, my ideas, and then he, you know, you're not gonna be able to get them all. So then it becomes a game of, okay, this is interesting to me, and so they get to act a little bit more like a producer. And you know, that's pretty compelling.
Yeah, I think that's a cool thing. So,
All right.
did we get to frequency yet? Like, are we doing this once a week or once every other week, or
I
what's
would
our
like
shit?
to do that. I would like to do that. Let's get Michael, let's try and get him on the phone this week. He sounded like he was sick. If we can't get him on this week, we'll get him on next week. Let's get on the thing and then let's plot. Shit. Plot the next couple of months and get our shows going.
Yeah, I agree. I think
We've
it'd
got
be
a good
fantastic.
formula. This is a good formula. This fits us. This is a good
Yeah.
formula,
I think
and it fits us, and it'll be easy. And I think all we had to do was work out some of the buggies, and I think we're very close to that.
from a night perspective, we probably should look at Tuesday or Wednesday night. Tuesday might be easier than Wednesday because you've got HR happy hour on Thursday, but I mean, we could do Monday, whatever, but T-Chat's gone. So that there's a hole that night where 9 o'clock on Monday night they've got job hunt chat.
Right.
I mean,
Right.
we could say fuck it, we don't really care. If you listen, you listen. If you don't, you don't. So we don't really care what everybody else is doing.
Well, I
But
was about to say,
that's
'cause it'll be recorded then and people can come and listen to the production, but you know, it's also the beauty of that is now it's recorded and you can go listen to it whenever you want to.
true. So if we're not playing
So.
with the Twitter people, then it does not really matter.
No, I think that's going to fit everyone's. Because when we started talking about do we do it as a schedule, do we do it this way or the other way, I think everyone was like, fuck, I'm so busy. Week to week, it's different. You know, I might be in Topeka. I might be here. So week to week, we just need to figure out, okay, there's the time that week. There's the time that week. There's the time that week. And then whenever we book it, we'll just book shit around it. And that way it's like, no, I got to do the show then. And we'll just do the show then, and then it's done, and then we can just post it and then just start marketing the shit out of it. Because I don't know. I mean, first of all, let's find out from Mike. I don't know if a standard time is actually going to work.
Yeah.
I'd like to think it would be, but I mean, look at this. You look at your calendar between here and July. Are there any weeks that are where you can find one day or one hour that's the same?
I'm not going to lie. Mondays are usually the weeks where I can pull that off.
Okay.
Like that's consistently most of my travel starts on Tuesdays because it's just a less expensive day to fly. So I usually, like, if I'm going out to see clients, I try to do it on a day that's cheaper for them. But that's what I normally have. I don't know.
Let's talk to Mike. I'll send him an email tomorrow. We'll get all on the phone and we'll figure it out.
Right on. Oh, and by the way, I don't think our show's going to play. So there's that.
Well, there you go. Bada bing, bada boom.
That's super easy. You didn't hear it.
Doesn't even matter. It was a good show nonetheless.
Agreed.
Alrighty. I will talk to you tomorrow with Robin.
All right. Talk then. Have a good one.
All right. Bye-bye. All right.
I think so.